It's KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. You hear plenty of opinions about the American government. What are the facts? That's the question Steve Ballmer asked 1 year ago. The former Microsoft CEO is a self-described numbers guy. He wanted to track America by the numbers, by the facts. How does the government raise and spend your money? What factual results do those programs have? He founded an online database called usafacts.org. It's 1 year into the project, so it's time for America's annual report. Steve Ballmer, welcome back to KUOW.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks, Bill.
You've been going at the numbers for a year now, and what's your biggest finding?
Well, there are a lot of interesting things. I'll give you just a couple. This year, if you take a look at what it takes to be part of the middle class, that is the middle 20% of Americans by income, that number's down to $31,000. It was actually 36 or 37,000 in the year 2000, which shows, in a sense, that's inflation adjusted. But what does that tell us? It tells us to get in the middle class, you have to make less money than you did, which is a sign that that middle class is getting relatively less affluent. That's an interesting finding.
Interesting. What do you do with that fact, that USA fact?
What I would propose is that each citizen understand that and make their own conclusion. There's a lot of conclusions you could draw. I'm not saying any one of them is bad or good. Very interesting.
What conclusion do you draw? Do you want us to know?
No, I really don't. Why do I not want you to know? Because I think for me, I have my personal points of view, of course, but I think it's important for citizens, by and large, to make their own decisions. I mean, I have a couple things I care a lot about. I care a lot about every child born in America have the shot at the American dream to move up economically. I believe that we're going to need to balance our budget. Otherwise, we're just leaving debt for our children. And of course, I have opinions on a lot of other things, but those are the only two that I feel are important for me to express publicly. But you know, there's a lot of good things. If you take a look, these days, about 69% of Americans between the ages of 18 and 64 work. That number was only 62% in 1980. Violent crime rates are down dramatically since 1980.
Yes, you highlighted that. Crime rates declining since 1980, but the reported rate of violent crime has increased since 2014.
Right, up a little bit since 2014, which I think people feel, but go take a look at the numbers.
You also point out the number of incarcerated people has increased by 330% since 1980.
Right, just over 2 million people. And people say, well, drug crime, this, that. And yeah, there's a surge in all those. But 50% of the people who are in prison are there for violent crime. Rape, murder, aggravated assault, non-negligent manslaughter. And the average time someone serves before they're released, so it doesn't include people who die in prison, is up to 4.2 years. That shocked me in two ways. Number one, it shocked me that it's only 4.2 years that you, on average, serve for those crimes. And it surprised me that it was up, because with all the talk I hear of incarceration reform, I might have guessed that number was down.
You highlight that there have been more suicide gun deaths than homicide gun deaths every year since 1981.
Yeah, I think if you know, you just read the press, you'd focus primarily on homicide deaths. And by and large, homicide deaths of a certain form, these kind of mass killings, which are absolutely horrible that happen. And yet, if you really look at where gun deaths are occurring, suicide is number one. And I think that's a mental health issue. That's an availability of guns issue. It's a variety of different things.
Is there a single policy prescription that you would hope to see coming out of all these USA facts that you're compiling?
Yeah, the one that I think is easiest for me to talk about then is the deficit. And on the deficit, if you just look at the numbers and you're realistic, they're all in the report, you would conclude you have to do a couple different things. Number one, we will need to include increased taxes, particularly at the federal level. And we will need to reduce the amount of money that we spend on health care as a country. Remember, government buys 50% of the health care. So if we want health care costs to come down, government can squeeze that system a little more. And as part of that, we're also going to have to bring down the costs of Medicare and Social Security. And we just can't blink either at the challenge of government playing its role in reducing the cost of health care or the role of government in really taking a look at Social Security and Medicare. Those things will have to happen. The other thing from a deficit perspective is population growth. Population growth is actually good at deficit reduction because you have more people working. But the population, for example, last year reported, grew about 2.2 million people, but over a million of that came from immigration. So changes in immigration policy will affect the deficit, as, of course, will the aging of our population affect the deficit.
Can you assess the Trump administration by the numbers?
That's one of the saddest things, I think. I have a lot of respect for what the government does by the numbers, but the numbers aren't fairly timely. There's very few numbers, I said today, but in most cases that meant 2016. The government, unlike a business, doesn't report those numbers right away. So when I hear politicians say, our policy is working, that got enacted 6 months or a year ago, I sit there and say to myself, what number is anybody taking a look at? Businesses would actually get those numbers real time, make those decisions. And I think it's important for government to report promptly. Otherwise, how do we hold these politicians accountable, whether it's the president or anybody else?
Are you saying that from your point of view, you're compiling this annual report by looking at the numbers in a nonpartisan way at usafacts.org? Are you saying there's no assessment yet to be made of the Trump administration?
There are no numbers reported yet, pretty much, beyond 2016. So what do we have? We've got 1.25 years. The government often restates the short-term numbers that it publishes because it has to go back and re-gauge sometimes. So if you really take a look at what numbers we have to assess the Trump administration, it's not very much. It's also part of the problem with politics. Everybody wants to say, let's make an immediate assessment. It's kind of like assessing R&D in a tech company. If you try to assess it minute by minute, you're going to make a mistake. It's the long-term body of work that's going to really drive success in these new product areas. And I feel like the same thing's true here. It's the long-term body of work that is almost better to assess government on. But then you're not assessing any one politician. You're assessing democracy and how it works. And if you look at the history, there are some things that seem to correlate. We get our economy all stimulated, and then it falls back. And yet, if you look at the long-term trend, you know, GDP per person has, I don't know, let me see if I can remember the numbers precisely. The last 18 years, the growth in GDP per person has been significantly less than the growth in GDP per person the 18 years that preceded it. We just used that because we look back to the year 1980. Well, you hear that and you say, if you want GDP growth, sounds like we're going to have to get population growth or inflation. That's, of course, nobody wants inflation. And at least what any one person gets to see is more like GDP per person than overall GDP. But you got to look at the long-term body of work to notice no matter what happens with the politicians, the shape of that curve has been sort of changing on a continuous basis. It doesn't matter whether you spend more money or reduce taxes or cut the interest rate. There's been a pretty consistent pattern, which tells me that maybe government's not impacting this stuff as much as the press would have you believe.
There are facts, and then there's your personal experience, and you have both when it comes to the regulation of high-tech, of tech companies. How should the U.S. government regulate Facebook?
I think that's a very complicated question. The thing I feel comfortable saying is Facebook should recognize the demands that are coming not just from the government, but from their customers. The government should realize that there's a way to overreach and really slow innovation. Now, how do you bridge those so the government does enough? Actually, having the government lay out some guidance might be helpful for Facebook. It would tell them what they really need to go invest in, but we won't want the government to overreach. We also don't want Facebook, if they don't get regulated, to underreach. That disconnect, certainly I felt in the course of the regulatory process we went through with government here in the U.S. and abroad.
Is there one regulation you would call on when it comes to Facebook? One government regulation? I mean, Europe certainly is regulating them much more than the U.S. is.
There is so much in the question of what to regulate, how to regulate. I mean, Facebook is a place where you're supposed to express what you're thinking. If I go on Facebook right now and say it's sunny and beautiful in Seattle, I should be allowed to say that. It's clearly false. It is raining in Seattle today. Should I be barred from saying that? Well, if I can say it, then you know people who have more nefarious purpose than I do can say it. What is the form of free speech that should be regulated? Tricky. Now, when it comes to advertising, there's probably more appropriate regulation. Now, all I'm going to say is that that's a complicated problem. I think it probably would be better adjudicated through a regulatory process. The FTC does regulate privacy, and I think before all is said and done, it's more likely to be handled by Facebook taking voluntary actions and the FTC taking a look at those. But that's all random speculation by Steve Ballmer.
This is, as you just heard, the former CEO of Microsoft, Steve Ballmer, who now is using his own money to compile USAfacts.org about how the government spends and raises money and the results of those programs, a nonpartisan, fact-based website. You do go out of your way, Steve, in your website to talk about you have a picture there of the Statue of Liberty. You talk about the American dream. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I do want to ask you about a lawsuit by some women, Microsoft employees, who have sued the company saying that things are not equal at Microsoft. There's a culture, alleged culture of casual sexism, a male-dominated hierarchy, poor resolution of employee grievances, managers saying, dress like the men, profanity in hallway conversations, bullying and loud voices, including the time when you were there. So I want to know, do you acknowledge any merit to those descriptions of the Microsoft culture?
I'm 4 years out of Microsoft. At this stage, I think it's probably fair to say that anything I say would be ancient history and therefore not that appropriate. I think most companies probably see ways to improve, but I can't comment about what's going on at Microsoft. Everybody wants to try to be more diverse, I think. Most companies should want to be more diverse, more open to multiple points of view, respectful. The one business I do run these days, the Los Angeles Clippers, we're certainly focusing on that. We have a very diverse team, not playing team, but our management team, our business team is quite diverse. The person who runs our business operation is female. So I feel very proud of what we've got going there. The Microsoft issues are better opined on by somebody who works there.
Well, speaking of multiple points of view, in a sports team, the Seattle Seahawks considered hiring former San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick, but reportedly passed on him when he wouldn't promise not to kneel during the national anthem. As you say, you own the Clippers of the NBA. Do you go strictly by the numbers, or do you account for politics or public persona in your athlete hiring?
It hasn't been an issue for us. It has not been an issue for us. That we needed to address. I mean, we do think about, you know, team chemistry. We do think about whether players have the Clipper characteristics. They're tough-minded. They work super hard. There's some things we care about, but we haven't certainly had an element where people's political points of view mattered at all.
Are players' politics fine with you? Be as political as you want?
People are allowed to have their own opinions. This is America. Just as we encourage at USA Facts, people should put together their own points of view. People should also live with the consequences. You know, we didn't have a big thing in the NBA with kneeling and the like, but at least our guidelines were clear what the potential repercussions are for players who express themselves in that way. But I love to see our players out expressing their points of view. They have a platform on which to talk about important issues. They're important people in society, and I think it's great for them to get out and talk as much as, frankly, a politician or a businessman or anybody else. So I value that expression from the athletes in the NBA.
Former Microsoft CEO, owner of the LA Clippers, and the website usafacts.org. Steve Ballmer, thanks for coming in again.
My pleasure, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And tomorrow, on Tax Day, the full USA Facts report will be published. And if you're interested in tuning into the shareholder meeting hosted by Steve Ballmer, you can join the meeting online at usafacts.org. We're tweeting out a link to that now at KUOW. That's the show for today. The Record is produced by Amina Alsadi, Allison Bruzek, Ajua Jimabrempong, Jason Pagano. Our social media producer is Bree Ripley. I'm Bill Radke. Coming up tomorrow, Seattle Times sports writer Matt Calkins says the Seahawks did nothing wrong when they passed on Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback who won't promise to quit kneeling during the national anthem. Also, King County Executive Dow Constantine, he canceled his State of the County speech when anti-youth jail protesters showed up. So I'll ask him about that and more. I hope you will tune in for tomorrow's show.